evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. Make sure I've got the right things turned off here. At this time, we begin the technical med on Limelight. And as you guys have heard lots of times before, major purpose of the technical med is education. We think we're teaching people how ham radio equipment works. And we try to tap into that, what we think is a pretty large chunk of brain material in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And so when people hear a question being asked on a subject that they have some experience, they give us the benefit of their experience, and we all get a little bit smarter. John, KC2, WGB, and Dick try to organize this thing, this enthusiastic group. A person signs in because you do have a question or a comment by giving John and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 30 years, it's going on 30 years now that this technical med has existed since September of 1982. We believe somebody is listening by now. A typical sign-in would sound like this, KC2, RFN, Alan, and yes. So do we have any check-ins? Please give me your call letters and name at this time, K2RIW.
W2OAY, Joe, yes.
Joe recognized. Anyone else?
Kilo 4, Victor Hotel X-ray. Vic, yes.
Okay, Vic, I think that was...
Yes, here for a short stay.
Who was that who said here for a short stay? Vic, we've got you. Pick you up in a second. Who is it that said short stay?
This is KC2, ZUM, Zebra Union Mary. Name here is Alan, coming in on Echolink.
Okay, we got you, Alan. And Vic, was that Kilo 4 Victor Hotel X-ray? Do I have that correct, Vic?
Roger, Kilo 4 Victor Hotel X-ray.
Okay, so we've got Joe, Vic, Alan. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Hi, Tariq Sheehan. And I have a question. When exactly is going to be 30 years?
My best guess, Wes, is somewhere in the middle of September. I'm not quite sure. I'm going to have to look back at my records. Also, if you multiply 52 weeks per year times 30 years, you come up with a higher number than I'm claiming. This is TechNet number 4,117. So I've either did a little bit of erroneous numbering in the beginning, or we did have a couple of absentees weeks because of holidays or illnesses or whatever. So it's close. We're not sure of the exact numbers, as you can tell. Close enough, though.
Why was it?
And so now the very first guy who signed in was Joe. Joe, W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Go right ahead with your question, Joe.
Good evening, Dick. Yeah, that was amazing. Good evening, Dick. How you doing? W-A-2-R-Y-Y. You talked about something related to HF and noise floors. You said the noise floor HF is 30 dB, but you didn't mention above what. What actual level above 30 dB it is. That was part of the, one part of the question I'm going to ask. And the other part of it is, does that change significantly per octave? Like if you double the frequency, four times the frequency, does that noise floor just sort of go down step by step by step so you get up to, say, the UHF or microwave region of the RF spectrum? Back to you.
Very fine, Joe. And this is a subject that is not very well understood by an awful lot of people, and it allows us to come up with some pretty wild theories as to how radio waves propagate. When you're on, say, 80 meters, the amount of noise your antenna is picking up from both cosmic noise as well as sky noise, the ionosphere, man-made, sky, cosmic, you put it all together, it's in the vicinity of 30 or 40 dB of excess noise, which could be called noise figure. So in other words, if you connected a RF amplifier to your 80-meter antenna, and if the RF amplifier had a 40 decibel noise figure, it would would amplify the signal, it would be creating some extra noise, and if then you did an experiment with taking that exact same amplifier and connecting it to a signal generator that's capable of putting out an 80-meter signal, but the signal generator is turned down to zero amplitude, we'll say. So your signal generator represents a 50-ohm load at room temperature, and you could call that 0 dB noise figure if you want, or you could call it a 3 dB noise figure. There's a slight difference there in the way you evaluate it, but a 50-ohm resistor at room temperature makes a very small amount of noise. A antenna at 80 meters under normal conditions is 30 or 40 decibels louder than that, equivalent to a 30 or 40 decibel noise figure. The bottom line of that is that when you now compare a single pass between you on Long Island and your buddy in New Jersey, and you first do the experiment at, say, 2 meters, and that noise, by the way, does fall off approximately 6 decibels per octave. By the time you get up to 2 meters, it's equivalent to a couple of decibel dB noise figure. Let me drop. So it does fall off continuously as you go up in frequency, and so the noise on 2 meters is only a few dB above what's called KTB. A 50-ohm resistor at room temperature would be KTB. Boltzmann's constant times temperature in degrees Kelvin times the bandwidth defines an amount of noise power you'll be getting from that 50-ohm resistor. So your 2-meter receiver is a hell of a lot quieter when it's connected to an antenna. So therefore, a 100-watt signal on Long Island talking to your buddy in New Jersey, he's going to hear most of the time a gangbuster signal. You take a 100-watt signal on 80 meters at high noon, and you try to talk to your buddy in New Jersey, and he doesn't hear you. At first, you'll think the signal is not getting there. In my opinion, the signal is getting there, particularly if you've got a line of sight path between you and your buddy in New Jersey. But the signal going over New Jersey is competing with the equivalent of 40 decibel noise figure of atmosphere, and it's in the daytime, it's also competing with D layer absorption. So you could do the experiment at sundown, so there's not much D layer absorption. And so the guy in New Jersey is not going to hear you unless the ionosphere is doing something really good. The signal reflecting off the ionosphere can give you a 60 or so decibel signal strength advantage. So there are times when the ionosphere is just right, and the buddy in New Jersey hears you gangbusters. But the ground wave signal, it don't hear. Not because it didn't get there. In my opinion, it's because it's competing with a lot of noise. So that allows people to come up with theories that the signal doesn't bend around the corner at 80 meters where a 2-meter signal does and whatever. I don't think so. I think the real free space loss on 80 meters and the free space loss on 2 meters is not that different. And so that doesn't explain it. I think it's competing noise. And so that
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
What you're hearing, Joe, is a strongly felt opinion on my part. I'm not 100% right. I'm not sure I'm right on this one. But after we discuss it for a couple of weeks, I think we'll find out what the real truth is. So noise is pretty difficult to deal with. In the case of the noise we were discussing last week, when noise comes into an antenna and you try to do something with it downrange, what you and I call noise is just something different than the signal that's on the frequency we want to listen to. It's some undesirable thing. And so your amplifier downrange doesn't know the difference between the noise and the intelligence you want to listen to. It amplifies both equally. And so you try to stop it from being created as close to the front end as possible. That's why on VHF, UHF frequencies, we tend to put a preamplifier right at the antenna if you had the wherewithal to do that. Back to you, Joe, W2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick. You keep on mentioning this figure of 30 decibels, but I know a decibel is a unit of change. It's not a thing you can grab onto, and that's probably what I'm trying to understand best. Is 30 decibels above what RF level? What would you equate the level to if it's 30 decibels above something?
Yeah, I keep saying that it's a 30 decibel noise figure. Okay. A 50-ohm resistor at room temperature. Room temperature, you and I might call it 25 degrees centigrade. We might call it 2 290 degrees Kelvin, is the IEEE definition, a 50-ohm resistor at 290 degrees Kelvin, has molecules that are at that temperature, has atoms that are at that temperature, and they're being shaken. That's what temperature really is, average kinetic energy of motion of those molecules. Therefore, those electrons going around those carbon molecules in your carbon resistor are shaking, and they're making noise, KTB. K means Boltzmann's constant, T is temperature in degrees Kelvin, and B is the bandwidth over which you make the measurement. KTB, 50-ohm resistor, room temperature is minus 114 dBm per megacycle. You could convert that to microvolts if you want, and whether or not you do it with a 50-ohm line or a 300-ohm line is your choice. So, minus 114 dBm, dB with reference to a milliwatt, is room temperature 50-ohm resistor. 30 or 40 decibels of noise figure is 30 or 40 decibels louder than minus 114 dBm for each megacycle of bandwidth over which you're making the measurement. So 30 dB louder than minus 114 would be, I guess, minus 144. I got it backwards. That's going down. You got to go up. You got to get louder, meaning minus 114. And I guess I got to get my calculator out for doing this one. Because, here we go. 114, change sign, enter, good. I'm going to go 40 dB above that. 40 dB louder than that is minus 74. So if I was using an amplifier, let me drop. If I'm using an amplifier that is connected to a 50-ohm resistor, and the amplifier should be seeing minus 114 dBm for each megacycle of bandwidth over which I make the measurement. But my particular amplifier is a really bad amplifier. It's got a 40 decibel noise trigger. It's making noise 40 decibels louder than the minus 114. 40 decibels louder than minus 114 is minus 74. So at 40 decibel noise figure amplifier would produce a power output of 74 decibels, minus 74 dBm for each megacycle over which I make the bandwidth. That's before I add the gain. And if the amplifier has 30 dB of gain, the signal would be 30 dB louder than that, which would be minus 44. So you can see, and by the way, that's for one megacycle of bandwidth. It would be 30 dB quieter if I used 1 kHz of bandwidth. Noise always has to be specified over some bandwidth. So now we've boiled it down to real hard numbers in dBm, where you could set a signal generator at that number and get a deflection on the spectrum analyzer screen or measure it with your spectrum analyzer. So when you talk about a 30 or 40 decibel noise figure, since everybody compares it to a room temperature resistor, it really is a specific amount of noise, noise power density, noise power per megacycle or per kilohertz of bandwidth. I wonder if that makes a little more sense, Joe. And I know the first time you hear all this, it doesn't go down easily. You got to hear it a couple of times. So if you come back and ask the same question next week, we'll thoroughly understand. W-A-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-Y-W. You got it, Joe.
I'll just transmit over that. Okay, yeah, it makes more sense. I sure remember this. That's the figure I thought you were referring to. I just wanted to just hear it to be sure. So minus 114 dBm or per megahertz, and if you get to figure that back, 1 hertz band would be like minus 174. Okay. So actually, if you think about this whole thing of relativity, even narrowing the bandwidth to say a 1 kHz bandwidth, 500 hertz bandwidth or lower on listening to CW, in certain applications, if you had a high noise figure on HF, you had one receiver capable of hearing half of a microvolt, and another receiver capable of hearing a quarter of a microvolt, on a noisy day, they probably would hear the same thing, wouldn't they?
Yep. When it comes to measuring signal sensitivity of a receiver, when it comes to our VHF handhelds, VHF base station rigs and mobile rigs, we tend to measure sensitivity in microvolts. 1 microvolt is minus 107 dBm. Half a microvolt would be 6 dB louder or quieter than that. Quarter of a microvolt, a really good rig, would be 6 dB again, total of 12 dB different, 12 minus 107, 7 and 12, 119, minus 119 dBm is a quarter of a microvolt. So whether you read the sensitivity of your particular receiver in microvolts or dBm is your choice. There's an exact equivalence once you've defined whether it's a 50-ohm system or a 70-ohm system. And so, without a doubt, a receiver that can listen to a quarter of a microvolt compared to one that can listen to a half a microvolt, the quarter of a microvolt receiver is 6 decibels more sensitive. Quite possibly, its overall apparent noise figure is 6 dB lower. That's what I think you asked. I think that's what you're looking for. Back to you, Joe, for any correction. WA2RYY, K2RYW.
No, what I was getting at is if you're trying to listen to, compare like the phonic specs of one receiver to another, this is basically where it's going. And one receiver says, okay, I have a sensitivity rating of a half a microvolt, okay? Another one gives you a rating of the same rating in decibels in, say, signal 5-band mode at a certain bandwidth of 0.25 microvolts. Yes, I understand it's 6 dB louder. But in reality, if you connect both receivers one at a time to the same antenna system and try to receive a signal out in the distance, if you have this tremendous amount of noise on top of added to through atmospheric noise, the relativity of it all is both receivers are probably hearing about the same thing because the noise figure, the incoming noise is so much stronger above the signal you're trying to receive. That's what I was getting at.
I'm now hearing you a lot better, Joe, and you're absolutely right. When the noise power coming into your receiver is more than a few decibels louder than the measured noise figure of your receiver, then the antenna noise dominates. I'll give you an example. Assume I've got a 2-meter receiver of medium good performance, which has got a 3-decibel noise figure. You and I could buy a preamplifier of an eighth of a dB noise figure if we're willing to spend the money and do the extra work from a moon bounce rig on 2 meters, but I've got, in my example, a 3-decibel noise figure receiver. And if, because of my local fluorescent lighting of the parking lot, of the shopping center that's near me, the apparent noise power coming into the antenna is equivalent to a 10-decibel noise figure, 10 dB louder than KTB, well, that's 7 dB above my receiver. If I add the two together, the receiver noise figure of 3 dB compared to the 10 dB coming in the antenna, now the delta is probably a quarter of a dB or something like that. Without a doubt, noise coming in the antenna dominates. That's what happens with 80-meter and 40-meter antennas and receivers most of the time. You could have a fairly dead receiver, a mixer front-end receiver with a fairly high noise figure on HF, and it may give you full sensitivity, even though it's got it might have a 12 dB noise figure, and you work real hard and bring it down to a 1 dB noise figure on 80 meters, you're wasting your time. The noise power coming in from the antenna dominates. Noise power adds in a power relationship. This is crazy. Let me give you another one on this one. Let me drop for a second. If I have a noise power of the receiver equivalent to a 3-decibel noise figure, and I'm on 2 meters, and the noise coming into my antenna is equivalent to a 3-decibel noise figure. I've got a 3 and a 3, both on noise incoherent with reference to each other. The total noise power coming in, you add the two together, will be equivalent to a 6-decibel noise figure. 3 dB plus 3 dB. I'm adding two equal amounts of power, and the net result is 3 dB louder. If I have two signals of each plus 3 dBm, and they are coming from a synthesized signal generators, which have a common reference oscillator, so the two signals are equal length of cable, and they're completely coherent coming out of the two signal generators, and I've got some kind of a magic device which adds the two together without insertion loss. There's another factor you've got to figure in there. I'll forget about that for the time being. A plus 3 dB signal from generator number 1, a plus 3 dB signal from generator number 2, add them together, you get twice voltage. You get a 6 dB increase. The signal will now be plus 9. So plus 3 and plus 3 in coherent sine wave signals, plus 3 and plus 3 dBm, will give you plus 9 dBm. When I'm adding noise, plus 3 dBm of noise, plus 3 dBm of noise, added together gives you plus 6. Noise adds in a power relationship, signals add in a voltage relationship. Turns out they're both adding as voltage. The reason why the noise is adding as power is because noise being thoroughly incoherent, some of the time it's in phase, the two signals of noise, let me drop. The two noise signals, sometimes they're in phase and they add in a voltage relationship. Sometimes they're adding out of phase, 180 degrees out of phase, and they cancel. The average between the two is a 90 degree phase shift between the two. 90 degrees is much more likely. Add two signals that are 90 degrees out of phase. Believe it or not, they add, if they're equal in power to start off with, they add as if they are adding in a power relationship. So you could say noise spends more time 90 degrees out of phase with each other because they're incoherent, whereas with two signal generators carefully adjusted, could add in a pure voltage relationship. It's not clear, I know it, but now you know a little bit more, but you've got the exact right idea, and that is, if the noise coming in the antenna measured as an equivalent noise figure, if it's a significant number of decibels, more than a few decibels louder in noise power, in equivalent noise figure, compared to the real noise figure of your receiver, then the noise figure of your receiver doesn't matter. And spending extra money in that case might not buy you anything, if you know what I mean. Back to you for a final on this one, Joe. W2RYY, K2LIW, and the Tech Man.
Okay, very good, Dick. It starts to make more sense. I guess even though the noise drops off significantly as you go up a couple of octaves into the VHF and UHF range, it can still play an important part of how you receive something, but depending on how the noise is coming into your antenna system and how louder it is than your signal you want to try to receive. So really, in reality, you could have the hottest receiver that they make, put a preamp on it, make it even more hotter, but when you connect it to your antenna system, everything goes out the window if you can't receive a signal below the noise level of the what the antenna itself is receiving, just within itself.
Give that man a cigar. You've got the concept, Joe. This becomes very important if you and I were doing moon bounce, and if we choose the time of day and the time of year where the moon happens to be almost in the direction of the sun. The moon may be 3 degrees away from the sun, but I'm using a 10-degree beamwidth antenna. So I'm aiming this, my antenna at the moon in order to pick up that moon bounce echo, and right behind the moon is the sun, and the sun as a noise source is huge. So the noise power coming out of the sun adds to your antenna noise, and therefore you and I doing moon bounce during that part of the day, during that part of the year, will suffer a huge disadvantage because of the noise the sun is pouring into your antenna. Choose another time of the year where the moon is now having a background, which is the cold part of space. You got to worry about space. Sun is a huge source of noise. The center of the galaxy is a source of noise. So your antenna temperature in that environment when you're doing moon bounce is a function of where you aim the antenna. Even though you got the antenna well above the horizon, you're no longer looking at that parking lot of fluorescent lights. So on top of that, the moon itself is a warm thing in space. I think it's equivalent to a 240-degree Kelvin black body object, so you literally get thermal noise off the moon. As you get a real high gain antenna that looks at just the moon, you're getting the noise of the moon. You're literally doing a radio astronomy measurement. You're literally measuring the temperature of the dirt on the moon when you aim a high gain antenna at the moon and make a careful radiometry measurement. Ain't that crazy? I'm going to move on, Joe. You're onto a very interesting subject matter here. Vic was the next guy, K4 Victor Hotel X-ray, I think it is, and Englewood, Florida, it says. I don't believe that, but go right ahead, Victor.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
I think you did say you're coming in by Echo Link. Go right ahead, Victor, K2RIW, and please wait for the beeps. I didn't.
Well, good evening, Dick. Yes, I am visiting the area from Englewood, Florida. I'd like to make contact with the repeater down there using IRLP, but I'm just not sure of the protocol or procedure for connecting to the node I need to connect to down in Florida via your repeater. I wonder if you could help me out in that regard.
Unfortunately, I cannot. You're in one of the areas where I'm pretty dumb on this one, Vic. However, there are people on this repeater, particularly Eric, KE2EJ, among others, who can definitely answer your question. So I hope Eric is available, or anyone else who has IRLP experience, please give me your call letters right now. K2RIW listening.
I'm here, Vic.
Go right ahead, Eric, and tell Vic what he'd like to know.
All right. If you've got an IRLP node that you can dial up, you can find it at reflector 9126. 9126, which is on the New England reflector. Dial that up, and you'll be right here.
Now, let me give Victor, put some words in Victor's mouth here, Eric. What he's specifically asking is when he's in Florida and he is now operating through his local repeater, I think you're saying that once he gets into the IRLP mode, he seeks reflector 9126. Then he will be talking to the node which talks to this repeater. As you can tell, I'm not really sure of what I'm saying, so please correct me, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW. So reflect it back to him in Florida. What do you recommend he do next? You got it, Eric.
K2LIW, K2EJ. If his local repeater in Florida is an IRLP node, or there should be one there, depends upon where he is. Some places have, some places don't. But assuming that he knows that there's a IRLP node down there, an IRLP repeater, otherwise he probably wouldn't be asking the question, he will simply access the IRLP, dial up 9126, and he will find himself connected to both Glen Oaks and Sheldon, and possibly whomever is also connected. We sometimes have a connection to Las Vegas to a solar panel repeater. Sometimes there's some folks, like right now, there's some folks up in Ontario with dial us up to the TechNet. It's really just as simple as that. K2RW, K2J.
Yes, this is Vic again. Maybe I wasn't clear. I'm here in Plainview, New York, and I want to call an IRLP node that I know, number 4155 in Northport, Florida, community near where I live. So it's that direction that's the node I'm trying to connect with, and I wasn't sure the protocol to use for your repeaters here.
WHYY.
Okay, let me go.
If you have a UHF radio, then there's no problem. Go to the Limehouse UHF, which is 449125, and dial up the node you want. And over to Dick, who can turn it over to RYY.
So I think you're saying that once he's on the 449-125 Limehouse UHF local repeater and he gets into the IRLP mode, I think you're saying then when he dials 4155, he will be talking to his Florida repeater. That's sort of the way I understood it. Let me turn it back to Joe, and after Joe, I'm going to turn it back to Eric if more corrections required. W2RYY, which uses IRLP quite a bit. You got it, Joe. K2RIW.
Very good there. I was going to offer the guy to get my IM repeater set up that also has IRLP on it, and, I understand what you're trying to do. You're up here in Plainview, and you want to talk to somebody in Florida, so I don't know if they can just as easily disconnect the node from the reflector on the 2-meter repeater, but if you have UHF available, you can also use my repeater. It's on 448175, PL107.2. I'd be glad to connect up the repeater to the node you're talking about, and you can have fun.
Try to see if there's any further information that you think would help, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RAW, go right ahead to tell Vic.
There actually are quite a few IRLP nodes, including my repeater, which is on 447200, although it's down this week and back up next week. So there's quite a few repeaters around. Both my repeater and the Limehouse repeater are in front of you, so you don't need any power out of your HP to make it happen.
Let me ask you this, Eric. I'd like to believe, I've got to turn down this other radio. I'd like to believe that there is a website. I'd like to believe there's a website I could go to. I could tell that website that I'm in the Long Island area, and therefore, which of the local repeaters, their frequencies, their PL tones, and whatever are IRLP able, enabled. Is there a website that any of us could go to find out which in our area are enabled? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
You can go to IRLP.net, that's .net, so go to IRLP.net, you can do it several ways. You can look through the list. You'll see on the left hand side there's a thing that says the connected nodes and reflectors. You can do it by state, you can do it by city, you can also do it by zip code. It will give you a collection of repeaters and the distance that you are from that particular zip code.
That sounds like good information, Eric, and I thank you. I believe a person, though, needs other authorization to be allowed to use IRLP. Isn't there a procedure you have to go through to prove that you are a good guy, if you know what I mean? Back to you, Eric.
Well, as a general rule, open repeaters also have open IRLP. There is actually, if you go to the website, there is an operational manual or a user etiquette in which they like folks to follow, which is just simply announce your call, say that you're going to use IRLP and dial the number. There are some closed repeaters, and if there's a particular repeater that you want to use, it's not a widely open machine, there is an email address where you can send the owner a little bit of an email, and some IRLP nodes are closed and have an access code. And drop the guy an email, and generally you'll get a good response and a return with the access code so you can use it while you're traveling in his coverage area.
Okay, I'm slowly getting smarter. And one of these days, maybe I should, because I've got a Linux-enabled computer system, and that is not so compatible with IRLP. I know that there's a degree of difficulty in there. I think it's got to be a Windows-based system in order to easily sign into IRLP. Is that approximately true, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
That's completely inaccurate, Dick. There are no computers required in IRLP. All you need is a touchtone pad on your radio. If you want the information, if you have a web browser, that's all you need. You can go to IRLP.net. You can get the information that you need. You can send a guy an email and do all those things. K2RIWK2J.
Yeah, I think I see what I just did. I confused IRLP with EchoLink. In the case of EchoLink, I believe there I need a Windows-based system in order to be more compatible. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
That used to be the case, but I believe there is a Linux-based application that you can get for EchoLink on your Linux machine.
In India.
I heard somebody signing in with India in the call letters. Want to give that to me again? Want to try one more time?
Okay. Victor Echo 3 Juliet, India Whiskey. Victor Echo 3 Juliet, India Whiskey.
Victor Echo 3 Juliet, India Whiskey. I believe you did tell us last week that we're not giving you enough delay in order to reset your machine. Is that true? I started with your name, sir. My name is Dick. K2RIW, TechNet Listening.
My name is Jim. I have no problem where I am now with that. What I want to say that IRLP and EchoLink are two different animals. The gentleman wanted to connect. If he has EchoLink and he wants to connect
he can. IRLP is radio only to make a connection. There's no, I don't believe there's any keyboard way you can mic and keyboard into an IRLP note via IRLP. That was something that was missed. When somebody said all the rest, that was misleading. That was all I wanted from what I was hearing.
All right, let me answer that, Dick.
I thank you for that information, Jim. And Eric, go right ahead.
Get in. His call sign is Victor Echo 3, Juliet, India, Whiskey.
The reason why we speak both IRLP and Echolink on this is they're both active at the same time. You can't cross-connect, meaning that you can't go from a Echolink computer operation to an IRLP operation, as the gentleman in Canada is saying. But you can make a connection to this repeater via IRLP, or you can make a connection to this repeater via Echolink, and they both operate simultaneously. There are things out there known as IRLP Echo nodes, which is not supported by the IRLP group. And generally, it's one or the other, but we have things set up here so that both of them are active at the same time. KRIWK2J.
Okay, Jim and Eric, thank you for that. Vic, when you do make it all work, please come back and let us know what you did and how successful it was. Back to you for a final, Vic. Kilo 4, Victor Hotel X-Ray, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you very much, Dick. Very informative, and I'm going to give it a try tomorrow and see if I can make contact with my friends back in Englewood, Florida area. So, very fine net. I find it very interesting, and I'll be here next... no, I won't be here next Sunday, so I'll be leaving Sunday morning. But thank you very much for your help this evening. It's been very informative, and I'll give you a report, some feedback when I try it tomorrow. Thank you, and 373 for now. K4VHX.
One additional tidbit.
Okay, Eric first, and then we're going to pick up the K4 that's trying to sign in. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, we just need to let the folks know that on Echolink, you look through the list and look through the W2VL or W2KBQ, and that will get you there. I don't offhand remember the node numbers, but you can do it by call sign, and that's the easiest way to go.
So I'll say those a little bit slower. This repeater you're listening to now is Whiskey 2 Victor Lima, W2VL, and K2, why can't I think of his call that is Eric, the 440 machine?
Now, the 440 machine actually is W2KBQ, but the machine in Selden is W2KBQ, and one is identified with an L, and the one identified with the R is the one identified with the L. Is a UHF machine, so if you find that W2VL is at its maximum limit, which is, I think, we have set for about 10 users, you can also make the connection via W2KBQ-R, which is the Selden machine. The UHF machine also has its own node, but that doesn't get you to VHF.
And one little bit of history here. W2KPQ is one of the founders of this club way back in the 1968 time frame. And back in 1975, he used to run something called the Amateur Television and Technical Net, which he did that for about a year. And so he's a silent key now, and in his honor, two of the machines locally have his call that is W2Kilo Papa Quebec. Okay, the next person on the list was Alan. KC2ZUM. But before we pick up with Alan, there was a person out of the area, I believe, trying to sign in as a K4 something. The K4, please give me your call letters and your name. I'll put you on the list. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Kilo Juliet 4, India, Berlin, Hakiva. KJ4ILK. The name is Richard.
Okay, I think I got that. I believe I got that as Kilowatt Juliet 4, India Lima Kilo. I'm not quite sure what your name is, and there's a little bit of distortion there. I think we're going to have some trouble, but when I come back to you, you're next on the list after Alan. So, Alan, KC2 Zebra Uniform Mike, go right ahead, Alan, with your question. K2LIW in the TechNet.
I think his name is Ricky.
Okay, thank you. You've got it, Alan.
Okay, good evening, Dick, and to the TechNet. I have a quick question here, and by the way, first let me thank Eric very much, because he helped me a lot getting going with IRLP about a year ago when I was experimenting with it. I'm coming to you by EchoLink, and my question is, on the right now what I'm using for the push-to-talk feature, I'm using the control key, which I assigned, to transmit. I know that there's a feature on the serial port to transmit, and I'm just wondering if anybody knows, obviously that's a contact closure, but anybody happen to know what the leads are for that, so that I can put a connector foot switch to that, so that I can transmit from the serial port instead of using the keyboard. Back to the net.
I hope Eric can handle that one. KE2EJ, give it a go. K2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
K2RIW, K2EJ. You have the option of using two different pins. You can use data set ready, or you can use 1SDPR at data set ready, and I'm trying to remember the pins. Anyway, if you go to echolink.com, or is it .org? No, I think it's .com. I'll just do a Google search for EchoLink. There is a technical write-up that will show you what pins you can use. You just have to set in the system properties which pin you're actually using. Is DPR or DPS? Thank you. I think one is pin 7 and the other one's pin 6 or pin 9. Don't quote me on it. What you got to do is you got to raise it. You got to bring it up high to make it work. That's actually one of the ways that we force EchoLink into transmit mode, or in order for you to hear what's going on in the repeater. There's actually a TOS line that's being connected to it. If you give me a minute, I'll actually look it up for you. K2RW, K2J.
As I see it, Alan, the refine.
I'll wait for the call on that. And other than that, we've got everything running pretty good here. I hope the audio is okay. What I'm doing is something different. I'm using a mic mixer, Yamaha mixer. I got a dynamic mic into the input of the mixer and the output of the mixer board. I'm going into the sound card of the computer. I find that most of those USB microphones and USB headsets, they're a waste of time. So I tried this, and it seems to be doing okay. I want to thank you for that. That is my question for this evening. Love the TechNet. Glad to be able to join it again since we moved up here to Dutchess County from Queens and had trouble getting in by radio. So this is our only option right now. So back to the net. Thanks again. And also I just want to say I am very grateful to the Limark Group. And you guys are always the greatest, always willing to help at all times. Appreciate you very much. This is KC2ZU. I'm back to the net.
Yeah, that audio is quite good, Alan. You've got that adjusted very well. Not too heavy, not too light, good band pass and so on. And, John, we got another happy customer. We're going to have to send him a bill. That was a joke. So, looks like Alan's doing very well from Fishkill, New York, where he's now living. I wonder if Eric has found that data he's looking for. If not, we'll try him again in a few minutes. But for the time being, KE2EJ, K2LAW, go ahead, Eric.
K2LAW. Oh, I got to get some data. Somebody killed me. K2J, actually, it's echolink.org. And if you go to the interface page, I'm just looking it up now. I think it's, yeah, give me another minute and I'll find it for you. But it's one of those two pins. You can set it for either one. And, maybe about two or three more minutes and I'll tell you which one it is. KQRWK 3Z.
That's good, Eric. We'll pick up the next guy and then we'll come back to you. The next guy, I think, is going to be Ricky. Kilo Juliet 4, India Lima Kilo. Go right ahead with your question, and I think it's Ricky. And speak a little bit slowly, Ricky, because I was hearing a little bit of distortion, but I think we'll figure it out. K2RIW listening. My name is Dick. You got it, Ricky.
I'm looking at the map off radio mobile, and it says from the Austin Georgia, just a little west of it, only has 108.79 decibels. WS3, do you have the number? The obstruction loss is 56.72, forest loss is 1.0, urban loss is nothing. The statistical loss is 6.16.
Ricky, what I was hearing was a tremendous amount of echo. I could pick out certain words. Some of the words I could pick out was 43 watts. One of the words I could pick out is minus 113.2 decibels. Another word I could pick out was obstruction loss. I'm going to make a guess as to what you might be asking, and I'm going to try to answer a question. When it comes to free space laws, it's a function of frequency and miles and what you're using for the transmitting and receiving antenna. If you were using zero decibel gain antennas for transmitting and receiving, people will call that isotropic path loss. Isotropic path loss in decibels is a fairly simple equation, which is, let me drop.
The B2OY with a comment.
Okay, maybe you understood him better. Maybe you know why there's echo. Over to you, Joe.
Sometimes the stations connect via IRLP or connect through Echolink. The path that they're coming in through the internet has significant packet loss or delay or echoing like you're getting. What you might want to suggest the guy do is disconnect from what he's connected to and reconnect and see if that changes the path. It might be, you know, improved.
And Dick, I also have that information.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to give you some time, Ricky, is to disconnect and reconnect and hope you get a better path that doesn't have such a heavy echo. In the meantime, I'm going to let Eric give us his information. KE2EJ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Eric.
All right, K2RIW, K2EJ. The way to... If you're using Echolink from your computer, the way to remotely use it is you go into Tools and then Preferences, and you can go to the page that the tab that says Connection, and then go to PTT Control, and then click the little checkbox that says Serial Port CTS or Clear to Send, and then if you just want to ground it, you can. There's another little checkbox that lights up. Says active low, and you make your connection from pin 8 of your serial port to ground, and that'll get you your transmitting. K2RIW, K2EJ.
Okay.
K-J-I-L-K.
Thank you for that information, Eric, and hopefully our previous person asking that question, I'm not sure now, was it Vic or Alan? Hopefully he heard that. Let's see if we've got a better connection this time, Ricky. KJ4ILK, K2RIW. You got it, Ricky.
KJ4ILK, is this any better, Eric?
Boy, so far that sounds like it's a whole lot better. Go right ahead, Ricky.
Okay, my question was, my transmit power on my radio system is 43.01 dBm. My transmit line loss is 3.0. My antenna transmit gain is 6.00. My RF gain is 2.00. My line loss on my receiver is 0.50. And my RF sensitivity is -113.2. And that... My free space on my propagation, according to this radio mobile online, says my free space loss is 108.79 decibels. My obstruction loss is 56.72. My forest loss is 1.0. My urban loss is 0.0. My statistical loss is 6.16. What I'm not getting is my total path loss is 172.116.
7, 172.67 is my total passed off.
Okay, let me pick up what I think are the significant numbers and tell you what I think is a problem. You said that you're transmitting plus 43 dBm. Let's see, plus 40 is, plus 10, plus 30 is a watt, plus 40 is 10 watts, 20 watts. Plus 43 dBm is 20 watts. So you're transmitting 20 watts. That's going to go through some antenna gains and some path losses and building attenuation losses and whatever. And your receiver has a sensitivity, you said, of minus 113. So if I look at just those two beginning and ending numbers, minus 113 receiver sensitivity, plus 43 of transmitter power, and I look at the difference between those two, one's a negative number, one's a positive number, the difference between them two is 156.2. In other words, your total power spread between your transmitter and your receiver and all the jazz in between cannot tolerate more than 156 decibels of loss. So if the total path loss of propagation, attenuation of buildings and whatever, if all of those numbers add up larger than minus 156 decibels, then in theory, you're not going to make it. The path is not going to make it, assuming that those numbers are accurate. So I think that's part of the answer you're looking for, Ricky. KJ4, ILK, in Dalton, Georgia, K2RIW, with the TechNet.
Roger, that is part of it. The other part is, what is urban loss and statistical loss? That's the other question I had.
Okay, I heard the first word, urban loss, and the second word, you're going to have to spell it because I didn't hear it. Urban loss probably means in an urban area you've got buildings and water towers and all kinds of things that are obstructing that signal. If this is the best of all worlds, between your transmitter and that receiving antenna, there should be nothing but free air, no earth curvature, no obstacles, no trees and forests and all these things. Everything on VHF frequencies and even HF frequencies, all of these things create loss. So assuming that that program you're using is accurate and you've given it the right information and all of those numbers added up the way you told me, 170 dB of loss overall, and you can only tolerate a power spread of 156, it sounds like you're not going to make it. However, in many cases, let me drop.
B2, BHY with a late check-in.
Jim recognized. In many cases, there's something you can do about it. One of the rough rules of thumb, which sometimes is very handy, is that if you raise the altitude of your antenna so that it clears local trees, if there's a forest in front of you, clears the building, clears the hill, or whatever. And the rough rule of thumb is that when you stand at the antenna and look at the horizon, and if you're changing the altitude or location of the antenna so that the horizon your eye sees dips away one more degree, if you do something so that the horizon is one more degree depressed, all signals over that horizon just got 6 decibels louder. What is 1 degree? 1 degree is 92 feet per mile. If you had a hill in front of you 1 mile away, and you raised your antenna by 92 feet by putting up a tower, that hill would now look 1 degree lower as far as your antenna is concerned, and all signals above that, beyond that hill, just got 6 dB louder. Rough rule of thumb. The number of decibels you're lacking is a lot more than that, so that's probably not going to do it, but still I thought it's something you'd like to know. Now, there was a second word I didn't understand. You might have to spell it to me, Ricky. KJ4, ILK, K2RIW, in the TechNet.
Yeah, Roger. Statistical. STATISTICAL loss. What is statistical loss?